Directions Media. This is Directions on the News for Tuesday, February the 12th, 2008. Each week we tackle a timely topic of interest to the geospatial community. This is Joe Francica, and I'm joined by my colleague, Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor. This week we'll tackle maps in the media as we saw location technology front and center during Super Tuesday's primary elections in the United States, and also how technology succeeded or failed in alerting the public during that same day's outbreak of devastating tornadic activity in the South. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by ESRI. With ArcGIS Online, you can combine ready-to-use maps, reference layers, and functional tasks with your local data to support your GIS work. Save time and benefit from on-demand GIS content. Learn more about ArcGIS Online at www.esri.com/directionsmag.
The first thing I want to touch on is how the media alerts the public in times of potential natural disaster. I'll speak from personal experience. One is on the Super Tuesday, last Tuesday, there was an outbreak of tornadoes in the South and some of the Midwest. So I was awakened about 3 a.m. in the morning by the tornado sirens. This is not an unusual event if you live in the South. This happens whenever there's storms entering the area. But the sirens only go off when there is a tornado touchdown in your county. And that, of course, brings me to the topic of geographic level of accuracy. The National Weather Service will only send out an alert when a tornado touches down in a broad countywide area. People with weather radios will hear this alert, but again, you don't have any real idea of where that storm is headed. The local news media, especially in the South, have great information. The weather forecasters get on the air almost immediately and show you maps with time of arrival and direction of the storms. They can indicate with Doppler radar the circulation and can alert you, again, if you are watching the TV. If you never heard the sirens, you'd never get it. And this brings me to the last topic, which is I think there's more we can do. And I blogged about this on Wednesday. And two initiatives that are ongoing. One is the WARN Act. It was legislation signed by President Bush in 2006. WARN Act stands for the Warning Alerts and Response Network that is supposed to provide information coming from the Department of Homeland Security to use all means of communication to get life-saving alerts out to citizens. The second is a FEMA pilot program called the Geotargeted Alert System, which is part of another system called IPAWS, or Integrated Public Alert System. Again, another way of getting information out to the user. So, although we're doing a good job of getting there, getting information, but not all the way there. We're not there to the personal level. And I always think that we ought to be using cell phones, which are now well aware of location.
Some of the things that you pointed out have a lot to do with just sort of the way we've chunked up our geography. At the outset, you said that if the tornado touches down in your county, the alert goes off. Well, what if you're at the far edge of a county? You know, shouldn't you be knowing about the alerts in the neighboring county?
That's a good point, because certainly I live in the far south part of the county. Some of the storms are in the north part of the county, and yet the storm that killed three people was about 30 miles away from here in an adjacent county.
So it just goes down to sort of the level of geography that we're using, and that's sort of an artifact. And your point about using personal locator devices like phones to determine whether or not you get an alert certainly sidesteps that whole issue. On the other hand, it doesn't sidestep another human life cycle issue, which is when you go to bed, where's your cell phone?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So if, heaven forbid, there was another tornado at 3 o'clock in the morning, that cell phone may or may not be of value, but that siren sure did wake you up.
People will look at these storms and say, well, there were 50 people killed anyway. You know, why weren't they alerted? And in fact, the National Weather Service had predicted these storms 6 days in advance, and we're watching the approaching fronts well in advance, and we're warning people up, you know, certainly the night before.
Right, and that again goes back to human nature. And first of all, did they hear the warnings? Did they heed the warnings? Certainly up in the Northeast where I am, as soon as they predict a foot of snow, some huge percentage of the population says it's not going to happen. And certainly with the hurricanes of the past couple of years, we certainly know that plenty of people get the information and choose not to react.
And it also goes to more than just the storms. It goes to when an event happens, are you going to be alerted? I go back to my experience in the Hawaiian earthquake in 2006. Of course, you can't predict earthquakes, but you can predict aftermath, one of those being a potential tsunami. And how will you alert the public at that point? Can you react fast enough to get the information to people? And how will you get it to people? Is a siren going to go off? And if a siren goes off, what does that mean? The point is that we have the means available to us currently with, I think, cell phone technology and with, you know, personal digital assistants and personal nav devices that will be GPS-enabled and probably in the future will have some means of communicating, whether it's Wi-Fi or other, to be able to get some additional information to the public in times of a natural disaster.
The other benefit there may be that there is a standard, and I mean that in the sense of how the information is communicated, so that we here in the Northeast, if we had a severe storm warning, we'd get a certain kind of notification. But if I was traveling in the South and there was a notification about a tornado, there'd be some standard way that was communicated, such that if I was out of my general location where I sort of know what to expect in these sorts of situations, I'd be much more calm. I know when I experienced my very first earthquake when I was out in California, I had no idea what was going on, and I was in a hotel, and the fire alarm started going off, and I literally had to go down to the front desk and ask what was going on.
Second topic we want to talk about today was the use of maps by the media. I thought some of the news media outlets here in the United States did a good job of trying to capture what was going on in each of the individual states during primary elections on Super Tuesday. The best one I thought that was doing a good job was CNN. They had John King standing in front of a very, very large map and drilling down to a county level to show what the results were at that geographic level. And what he started to do was actually do some analysis in terms of this candidate was winning this area, and he was actually trying to relate it somewhat geographically to urban areas versus rural areas, but that's about as far as it got. I think what this is pointing to is a growing sophistication of our understanding of geography, and I'm happy to see what is going on, because even though it's pretty gross in terms of the scale of what we're analyzing, it also shows the fact that the media is comfortable enough using maps to communicate what is happening at a more local level, and I think that's a really good sign.
CNN is a national network. So going much deeper than the rural-urban distinction would have very little meaning except for the people who knew that geography well. So I'm much more interested in having my local news team here in Massachusetts tell me about the differences between what happened in Boston and what happened in Worcester and what happened in Springfield and what happened in New Bedford, because I know the differences between those places. But it would be meaningless for me if they were talking in detail about the counties in Florida.
Now, that's interesting. Did you see any of that happen either on that evening or in the following day's newspaper?
I actually did hear quite a bit of it in the local news and on the local radio.
The thing that they were trying to point out, at least on the Republican side, is that there was some connection between some of the candidates to the rural areas, but I don't think that they went far enough, and that was my point. And maybe it wouldn't. Maybe it would be too sophisticated for them, for the national audience, to say, well, I really don't care about that.
Half of that story, I think, though, is the technology behind it. You know, having the big map and the touch screen, and this was brought up in a number of articles this week, while the touch screen and the person interacting with it isn't all that different than somebody behind the scenes creating the graphics or with a keyboard, I think it's just more fun to watch somebody interacting with this technology.
I think that's a really good point, and the national media outlets, I think, are becoming more sophisticated in that. You know, I did go to some of the individual campaigns to see what technology they're using. Clinton wasn't really using any types of maps, but what they seem to be trying to do is appoint people who are interested in the campaigns to different either fundraising or other activities or events. McCain is using Google, but the best one, I think, was Obama. He's actually got his events mapped out pretty well. Looks like he's using Yahoo Maps and got little call-outs, individual locations with information, so I think he's doing a pretty good job.
And there is actually a lot of use of GIS on the other side, which is when they're canvassing and such. There's a lot of discussion of that earlier in the campaign season about creating lists in neighborhoods and using GPS and sending the volunteers out with a route, you know, of the houses that they should knock on doors of.
Yeah, and I think that has been in use for a few years. I know that the one company that I knew of doing this very specifically was a company called Election Data Services.
And I have a sneaking suspicion that there is an awful lot more sort of consumer-level technology in use for those kinds of things. I can just imagine people with their TomToms and their Garmins, you know, out and about canvassing.
Well, that's all the time we have today. Our sponsor, ESRI, would like to remind you that the 2008 ESRI Petroleum Users Group Conference will be held in Houston, Texas on February 25th to the 27th. Join other GIS professionals in the petroleum and energy industries to see how the latest solutions can be used to manage your enterprise and make better decisions. On-site registration will be available, and for more information, please visit www.esri.com/directionsmag. Thanks for joining us today, and if you'd like to comment on today's podcast, please write to us at editors@directionsmag.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Directions on the News, and be sure to tell a friend.